Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
With us here on the telephone line is Jenny Curry, professional counselor in Milford, joining us here on the air this morning. Jenny, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing okay. Let's talk a little bit about marriage. Let's talk a little bit about divorce rates. Autumn, a popular time for many to get married. Are divorce rates still very high?
You know, they are. They have actually come down a few percent, believe it or not, from the 1980s. So now they're, you know, it's maybe about 42 to 45% of people, unfortunately, divorce after their first marriages. And, you know, this is a topic, too, that was close to my heart because I am actually a child of divorce. My parents divorced when I was in high school. And, you know, not to say anything negative about them, but it's definitely something that I can relate to. And as you can see from the statistics, I'm clearly not alone.
Yeah, well, and I do think it's interesting, Jenny, because a lot of times with, I know when my husband and I went to premarital counseling together, it seemed like when we were in counseling, very often some of the things that would split people apart, obviously there are the big ticket items like money or if there's a death in the family, but a lot of times, I don't want to sound insensitive, but they're silly things, like things that you could have either prepared for before you married this person or things that sort of developed because people became complacent. Is that true, or are there bigger things that we're not seeing?
Well, I think no, that's definitely true. I mean, and great job to you guys that you even did premarital counseling. So many people don't do that, and I think that the divorce rates would be lower if people even just took that that one step and did hash out some of these kind of day-to-day details of their lives and things like that. But, you know, there's other things, too, that can compound. And I found some interesting statistics, actually, on the website of a divorce attorney. So I would imagine that he kind of knows what he's talking about and has gathered his evidence. And, you know, there were some surprising things that I found, things like marrying before the age of 23 and actually cohabitation increased the likelihood of divorce. Some other things that make sense, you know, if you're surrounded by a lot of family and friends who are divorced and, you know, that kind of breeds the negativity, not marrying somebody who's close or so to your age. Also, I thought it was interesting that the higher the cost of the ring in the wedding, the more likely you are to divorce.
That's something that Tony gets real upset about, only because we were talking last week, Jenny, that people are going to big too, just so over the top for their weddings, and then all of a sudden it's like the high is over, like, oh, now what do I have to look forward to? But really, that's just the beginning of your relationship. It shouldn't be your high note.
Totally. And actually, the average marriage, I'm so sorry, I think I have allergies. The average marriage actually lasts about 8 years, and at that point, a large number of people just call it quits. You know, I think that's where the rubber meets the road and you have other compounding factors and, you know, it's beyond the honeymoon phase and all that fun of just planning a wedding. It's real life. It's real work.
Yeah. I read someplace, Jen, and maybe you can confirm this. I read someplace where the biggest factor in divorce is money and financial problems. Infidelity came in like second.
Yep. Oh, totally. No doubt. So money is huge for a variety of reasons, right? I mean, it just puts such a financial strain on the relationship. And then if both spouses are not on the same page about their spending and kind of a lifestyle, which I find especially in this area, in the Fairfield County area, is a big issue, right? People like to kind of live large. But the infidelity, and that actually brought me to some incredibly interesting statistics about social media. And I actually found that a third of affairs start online. Mm-hmm. And a number of divorce attorneys find that Facebook is the number one place where they gather evidence for divorce. And 25% of couples fight at least once a week about Facebook.
Wow.
It's like, and that 14% of adults say they look through their partner's social media and find evidence of infidelity.
Wow.
It's amazing.
So, I mean, that's really shocking things, but those are all things that I think most of us, we'd be lying if we didn't say we use on a daily basis. Like, I use mm-hmm. Facebook every day, whether it's for mm-hmm. work or whatever. So I guess we could kind of sit here and sort of poke fingers at why mm-hmm. people get divorced. But instead mm-hmm. of looking at that, how do we be proactive? How do we build a strong marriage? If you feel like you're broken right now, or you feel like you've hit a rut, maybe you have empty nest syndrome where you've been mm-hmm. raising kids for the last 18 years and you're like, wait, who did I marry? Or maybe right. you are only a few years in, like you said, and already kind of the spark is gone. What are some ways you could proactively build your marriage back up?
Right. Well, the other thing that I loved about this website is that it actually shared some of the things that were likely to decrease your chances of divorce. And, you know, some of those were basically having people around you who have strong marriages. You know, if your parents are happily married, and I would extend that to even saying if you surround yourself with friends, then as much as possible, those people who are heavy influences in your life, who are going to be a positive influence, I think that's huge. I think, you know, making sure that you communicate and that there's date nights, that you take time for each other and that life doesn't just revolve around the kids. And I would even say, too, you know, if social media is becoming a huge barrier in the relationship, then maybe it's something that needs to fall by the wayside, because marriage is the most important thing. And at the end of the day, friends come and go, but, you know, your spouse is that most important relationship.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We're talking with Jen Curry, professional counselor in Milford. Jen, we are running out of time, but I do want to give advice to every man that's listening out there. If you want a successful marriage, learn this phrase. Okay, that's what I do. My wife says, we're going to do this. Okay. We're going to go here. Okay. You're going to do this. Okay. We only fight maybe.
You and your wife, like, never fight.
We never do.
No.
We never do.
I think it's because you have understanding for each other. You have compassion. I think that's one of the first things that goes out the window once you become too comfortable with your spouse. I mean, am I right? Yeah. I think I've known my husband for 11 years, and I think before I went to counseling, I would just, you know, I'd get sick of him so quickly because he would do things and I would just be like, are you kidding? You should know by now or whatever. But they can't read your mind. Neither side can read each other's minds.
Yep. And that's where the communication comes in and is so important. You know, and to Tony's point, happy wife, happy life.
Right? There you go. Jen, if people want more information, what can they do?
You can go to jennycurrycounseling.org, and I'd love to hear from them.
All right. Sounds good. Jen, we'll speak to you again real soon, but very informative stuff. Thank you so much. Maybe we saved a marriage or two today.
I hope so. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
It's 9:30. Do you know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
All right, this morning we're speaking with Fran Mako. She's with AAA. We speak to her a couple of times a month, and it's always fascinating, always interesting, and always a lot of fun. Fran, how are you this morning?
Very good, Tony. How about you?
We're doing okay. Melissa's here. Say hello to Melissa.
Hey, Fran, how you feeling?
Hi. Much better, thank you.
Oh, good.
I tell you, I've never been so sick in my life since I was 10 years old.
Oh, really? What is it?
The
is
flu.
It the flu.
That's awful.
Fran, I
got the flu shot, too.
I was just going to ask you that. All right. Very good.
I did.
All right. Let's get rolling here, though, while you're still here with us. Let's talk a little bit about First Responder Day. What is that all about?
This actually is on October 28th. It's brand new. The Senate passed a resolution this summer designating October 28th as the nation's First Responders Day as a way to honor folks and to show gratitude for the work first responders do in this nation. There's an estimated 5 million firefighters, police, EMTs, and other first responders that serve the communities we all live in. And I want to bring this to the attention of your listeners because I feel it's connected to our state's slow down, move over law that requires motorists to reduce their speed and, if possible, move over on state roads when they see those responders, including tow truck drivers, assisting disabled motorists on the road. And unfortunately, less than 30% of Americans are aware of such a law. So AAA is attempting to raise awareness in various ways. Now, one of the things we're doing is I have a lunch every year on October 31st. I have to do it on Halloween because it's the only time I remember to do this, where we're recognizing area police departments, the traffic safety heroes in various departments for things that they have done in their communities to keep those communities safe. But we're also stepping up our efforts to highlight slow down, move over. We've updated our public service announcements. We have a 30-second public service announcement that I'm making available to area police departments and fire departments for their social media sites. One of the things we're doing different this year is we are doing media buys. So paid advertisements. In the past, I had to depend on the generosity of all you media folks to run my PSA for free, which I know is kind of difficult, but this year we're doing media buys. We're also thinking about billboards, and I know exactly where I want to put that billboard on I-95, right in the middle of Birchport there. There are so many good locations, because I think it's important to make people understand that these first responders are on our roadways to keep us safe. And unfortunately, any time it comes to the forefront is when something happens. For example, there was an orange police officer, I think it was in the middle of October.
Yeah, it was earlier this month. Yep.
Yeah, he was helping a disabled motorist on Marshall Road, and he got hit. So right away, you know, I call my media friends, and I'll do a release and say, listen, this, again, is a slow-down, move-over incident. And unfortunately, that's the only time people become aware of this. And every time the media runs something, and I'm sure right after this interview, I'm going to watch the roads going home on the parkway tonight, there is an emergency responder, a truck driver or an ambulance on the side of the road, and people actually do. I see brake lights. They actually do slow down, and I've actually seen people move over. But unfortunately, it's only when an incident occurs, and the awareness is raised by you folks.
Well, yeah, and I think you make a very valid point, Fran. I think that it's only in the aftermath, right? I mean, it's only a reactionary thing that people will typically pay attention. Oh, I heard this on the news, or oh, I saw this, or oh, my heart broke for that officer, you know, whatever the case may be. So I think it's great when you can bring attention to things when really nothing's going on, but you just want to be a reminder. So I love that you brought this up. I also love that we are recognizing first responders, because I think sometimes they get very overlooked. I thought about this the other day when we were at the parade, and we saw so many veterans, beautiful, beautiful people who served our country, and we always are immediate to say thank you for serving our country. But 9 times out of 10, when you pass a police officer, somebody who works in a hospital, somebody who works, you know, with the fire department, you don't really ever thank them for their service. But I know just from working in news, I've heard and I've told many stories of people who actually have struggled because they're first responders, and they've had to answer the wrong way crashes. They've had to answer to teenage, you know, kids being killed in car crashes, you know, whatever the case may be. And they have to carry those things. And a lot of times they get very much overlooked with what they do. So I commend the fact that we are recognizing them. And I guess the only thing that I would ask, Fran, because you're the expert on this, you had mentioned, you know, to do the slow down, move over if you're able to. Let's say, Tony. Yeah, if there is a situation where the road is too tight, you can't really make that pass or whatever, you know, what do you suggest to drivers? Because there are ways to make sure you're not hitting someone just because, well, couldn't get over.
Well, the law says you need to slow down to a reasonable speed. That's very vague. And they do that on purpose because there's so many, it's a judgment call. There's so much leeway. I mean, if you're going 60 miles an hour on the parkway or the interstate, you need to slow down to a reasonable speed when you are passing that emergency responder. Now, what's reasonable? 30 miles an hour? 20 miles an hour? It depends what everybody else is doing. I personally would reduce my speed by at least half. And again, if possible, move over. That does not necessarily occur. I know New York is extremely strict, and they require you to move over. And I know people here have told me that they have gotten tagged, and their explanation is that I couldn't move over. I could slow down, but I couldn't move over. But there's no ands, ifs, or buts in New York on the hutch or wherever it is you're riding. You're traveling in New York. Here, at least, our lawmakers have enough sense to understand that you can't always move over. So the law says reduce your speed to a reasonable speed, and that's a judgment call on your part. Use caution.
Fran, unfortunately, we've run out of time. If people want more information, what can they do?
Sure. They can call me directly, 203-937-2595, extension 4615. And if there's any area police department that wants to attend my lunch, just call me. And I'll fill you in the details and how you can nominate a traffic safety hero from your community.
Sounds good. Thank you so very much.
Okay, take care. See you in 2 weeks, guys.
Lenny Grimaldi knows more about Bridgeport than anyone. Tony and Melissa in the morning. WICC 600.
All right, it's a gloomy and dark morning, so it can only mean one thing. Lenny Grimaldi is here, and he writes the blog Only in Bridgeport. Lenny, how you doing this morning?
Good morning, kids. I am the prince of your early dark. I bring the rain. I bring the darkness.
Very, very funny.
Must be what living in Alaska is like 20 hours a day, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, sure. All right, let's get rolling here. We only got a few minutes. Let's start off with any decision from Judge Stevens to that court challenge for the September 10th Democratic primary. This seems to be dragging on.
I'll say it's like a rowboat against the tide. So I've been coming on the last couple of weeks saying we're going to get a decision soon. Don't ever believe anything I say. Well, so, yes, it's coming. So 2 weeks from today is the November 5th general election. Can you believe that? General election in 2 weeks. Meanwhile, playing out in Judge Barry Stevens' courtroom is the challenge to the September 10th Democratic primary, in which the plaintiffs maintain that absentee ballot irregularities altered the results. So tomorrow afternoon, Judge Stevens is going to hear final arguments from both sides, and then he will make a decision. The question is when. So both sides have filed their briefs. The city's position is being clear. There's been no altering of the votes. Was a bona fide win by Mayor Joe Gannon. The other side contends otherwise. So what the plaintiffs are asking for is the complete new primary for all the candidates on the September 10th ballot line. Interesting enough, none of those candidates are party to the lawsuits. This is kind of a weird case. It's very, very, actually a little bizarre how this thing is playing out this long, but that's the judicial process. So at the very least, the plaintiffs are getting their day in court. They can't complain that they haven't gotten their day in court. So we'll see what the judge does after hearing oral arguments on Wednesday. So when he issues a decision, it'll be less than 2 weeks from the general election.
Lenny, let's play pretend for a second, because I just think that this is something I've never heard about in 10 years of working in news. I've never seen anything like this, I've got to be honest.
I'm older than the sand at Seaside Park, and I've never seen anything like that.
There you go. So if the judge comes back and says, yup, there was some absentee ballot fraud going on, we're doing the primary all over again, mm-hmm. What in the world does that mean for a general election? Because it can't possibly happen where you've got the primary election and the general election within a two-week period. It's just, I've never heard of that even being a possibility.
There's only one word for it, chaos. So here's what would happen. If he sides with the plaintiffs, the city will immediately ask for an expedited appeal to the Connecticut Supreme Court. So, but you're less than 2 weeks out. So what does an expedited appeal mean? So the Supremes may hear this thing within a week and then issue some sort of decision. What would that be? Who knows? They could overrule the judge. They could actually say, let the general election go forward and we'll take it on appeal and issue a decision in the regular course of business. So it would be total chaos if that happens, because this is totally uncharted territory for us if that were to occur. So if he dismisses the case and sides with the defendants, it's pretty easy. The general election would go forward for November 5th, and everyone will breathe a sigh of relief, because you got, you know, on both sides of the aisle, whether you're the plaintiff in the case or defendants, you have a lot of candidates right now biting their nails, because understand that candidates have spent thousands of dollars for the general election. By the way, about 400 people have already voted by absentee ballot. A lot of them senior citizens, right, who've already voted for the general election. You know, all those votes
right.
would be impressed, right? So there's a lot in play. The whole infrastructure, a lot goes into the infrastructure of a general election to organize a citywide race. It requires a lot of work. That's already in place. So I've never seen a situation where an election being challenged, a primary election, has gone this deep into the process. And so a lot of people just want this over with. And you probably want this over with, too, so don't come on here every week to talk about it.
Well, no, because I was even confused about that. I was glad that you brought that up, because my immediate thought was there are a lot of people who have already sent in their absentee ballots for the election coming up in November. I mean, they're so beyond the primaries, they're already set and done and in their ways and what they decided they want to do. So do those just get completely canceled? You know what I'm saying? I just think that there's this whole backlog of problems if, in fact, yeah. You know, it's
That's
just...
the irony of this whole thing. You know, the claim by the plaintiffs that, you know, absentee ballot irregularities and people who've been disenfranchised, when you already had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of voters who've already cast a ballot for a general election, and, you know, that in itself would be disenfranchisement if those votes don't count. So it's like, you know, it's a really kind of strange, surreal situation right now. And, also, in addition to that, you're going to have candidates on the ballot in November who are not even party to this complaint. For instance, the Republicans and candidates for the Working Families Party, none of these candidates and none of the Democratic candidates are even party to this complaint in any way, bringing it at all. And they're saying, hey, what about us? We didn't do anything wrong.
So, right, exactly.
So so tomorrow afternoon, oral arguments. So here's what the judge could do. He could theoretically tomorrow, after the oral arguments, issue a decision from the bench and then issue his written ruling at a later date. But he could rule from the bench, or he could just say, okay, I'm going to absorb what you just said, I'm going to review all the briefs again, and I'll issue a written decision, which, if he does that may take another day or two or three. So, but he could issue a decision from the bench tomorrow afternoon, theoretically, and then file his written ruling. So
where's Judge Judy when you need her? She just gets these cases, and they're all wrapped up in 15 minutes. Does it every afternoon.
That's the beauty of television.
It's, you know what I mean? It's all edited, even with commercials, all done in 10, 15 minutes. It's amazing.
Can we get her on the phone right now?
I'm going to try and get her right now. Hey, Lenny, we run out of time. Thank you so much. The blog is called onlyinbridgeport.com. It doesn't need any introduction. Check it out. Lenny works real hard on it. So read about it if you want to know anything about Bridgeport. Lenny, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks. See you next week.
Have you ever felt uncomfortable walking into a store or a restaurant that clearly didn't think that you fit in? I think we've all done this at one time or another. I mean, I could tell you, I told you before, there were two instances. My wife and I, we walked into a restaurant. It was like one of those summery restaurants, you know, and it was in Darien. We walked in with our sunglasses on, and there were like three or four ladies sitting at a table, and they made fun of us because we had our sunglasses on.
I didn't know that was like an underlying not okay thing.
Well, you know, I mean,
on a summer day.
I mean, there's here we are walking into a restaurant in Darien. They were clearly Darien ladies, and here's me and my wife walking in. We're both a little schlubby, and clearly, you know, we weren't.
We just weren't making the grade.
We weren't making the grade, you know. And I told you another time we went out to eat, and hey, listen, it's no secret. My wife and I, we love to eat. We're heavyweights. That's the way that it goes. The waiter actually said we ordered our food excuse me, and the waiter turned around and said, no, that's, it's too much food. I'll bring you your entree, but that's it. Maybe a salad, but that's it. And I said to my, I went like this with my wife. And I pointed to the door. She got up, and we both walked out.
I would, too. I debated it a little bit yesterday because I wasn't in a restaurant, but I was in a clothing boutique, which, like I said, the way I was raised is that, you know, we don't have an awful lot of clothing, but if you have some, you know, a few really nice items, I like to invest in nicer items. Like this jacket I'm wearing, Tony, I'll probably wear this for the next 5 years, just quite frankly, because I spent some nice money on it. And, you know, when I went in there, I thought, you know, I want to, you know, update my wardrobe a little bit. It's been a little over a year since I've had a baby, so I want to update my wardrobe. And I walked in. I was the only customer in there, and there were five people working. Not one of them acknowledged me. Not one of them wanted to know how I was doing. There was just no real customer service. And then, fine. I'm pretty self-sufficient. It's not a big deal. But then when I checked out, they wouldn't even make eye contact with me. It was like, okay, yep, got it. That's great. You know, just really no social skills. And I thought to myself, you would much rather me be a 15-year-old who is a size zero, who is, you know, dressed to the T's, looks perfect, has their nails done and their makeup on and their hair straight and imperfect, and I'm just not that anymore. I'm a 30-year-old mom who has a 15-month-old who probably just threw up on me.
Yeah,
so that's,
there you go.
That's the best it's going to get right now, and if people can't accept it, it's just like, ouch. I don't know. It was a weird moment, and I texted Tony. I said, here's our question of the day. Maybe this still exists. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's just me being insecure, but you know, have you ever felt uncomfortable? And I think a lot of people, for the most part, said to us, Tony, and gave specific examples that it's still very much alive and well, feeling uncomfortable in places they don't feel they fit into.
All right. Jay, for example, you said, yeah, in Newport, Rhode Island, I was in my construction clothes after working all week in town. I was wearing ripped pants, covered in paint, sweaty and smelly. I walked into a place where dudes had sweaters and tied around their necks, and they wore loafers. That's the way I come to work every day, Jay. Sweaty and smelly.
Yeah, and I sit here with no problem. What's funny about Jay's story, Tony, is do you know how much money young, I'd say teenagers mostly, buy those ripped pants with the paint splattered?
Oh, yeah.
They'll spend like $200 on a pair of jeans that are basically all ripped. My husband and I are so old. We'll pass them. We went to the farm this past weekend with Chase, and Derek's like, why do they even bother wearing pants at this point? Because
yeah,
it's true. It's like they're more ripped than actual jeans.
Sure.
Lucille said, yes, one time I went into a women's store on the Post Road in Milford. It was in the new strip mall. I went to purchase a few shirts that were on sale, and when I went to pay, there was a sign on the counter that said, open a charge account and get 20% off your total. So I said, I'd like to open that charge. The girl at the counter said, really? You? I was so mad. I left the items, walked out, and then emailed the company.
Oh, my God.
What does that even mean?
Oh, my God.
Why would she say that?
Okay.
It doesn't make any sense.
Here's a good one. I read this one. Bridget wrote in and said, traveling to North Carolina a few years back, my family and I stopped at a Waffle House for breakfast in Virginia. We sat down and then began to feel very uncomfortable. We knew we weren't welcome, so we got up and left. Really? At a Waffle House? I mean, are you kidding me?
That's so ridiculous. Oh. We had a similar thing. I don't even think I told you about this, Tony. When Derek and I went on our past cruise just a month ago, we were in the wrong time slot. The cruise line had a lot of complications going on, and we sat with two other families, and they legitimately just sat there looking at us. So Derek was like, let's just get up and go grab like quick food on the top deck or something. So we got cheeseburgers because we were like, we're not going to sit here and be stared at. It was so weird. It was very odd. I love Mary. She ends it on a perfect note. Never has she felt uncomfortable because she doesn't care what people think. My money is just as green as the person next to me. Well, if I could just have that confidence,
yeah, well,
I would go places.
Yeah, but that's, she's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
She's absolutely right.